Chorus of Rage and Ruin. Welcome, everyone, to the Rebel Madman Radio program here on the 30th day of March in the year of 2024. And before we jump into our program today, I would like to please ask you folks, all of you who possibly can, to step up and support RBN. Do what you can to keep free speech alive in America. And I'm going to read you a quote, and I'm going to tell you, go to republicbroadcasting.org and jump on that donate now button. You know, everything is appreciated. The freedom of speech is the core to freedom. And I'm going to read you a very short little quote here that I think should be the motto for Republic Broadcasting Network. Without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech, which is the right of every man, as far as by it he does not hurt and control right of another. And this is the only check which it ought to ever suffer, the only bounds which it ought to know. This sacred privilege is so essential to free government that the security of property and the freedom of speech always go together. And in those wretched countries where a man cannot call his tongue his own, he can scarcely call anything else his own. Whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation must begin by subduing the freedom of speech, a thing terrible to public traitors, unquote. Well, folks, go to that republicbroadcasting.org and check in there. And today, folks, I am have a couple of my guests here have shown up so far. We've got another one. He's probably lost somewhere in the woods in Alabama, but hopefully he will show up eventually. So let's start off with our buddy out there in sunny Arizona, where they have, I don't know how many feet of sunshine today. Cal, how are you?
Well, can you hear me, Mike, first off?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Oh, okay. I had to switch headsets. Got it hooked up. Actually, we don't have sunshine today. We've actually got overcast, and we got a lot of flag motion going on. We don't use the W word because that makes water chop all over the lake. So, yeah, it's more of a spring-like day, actually, out here in former sunny Arizona.
Well, having lived in Arizona, I can tell you it's the weather is not always what you think it's going to be, that's for sure. And also joining us today, we've got our good friend up there in Ohio, Jim Ram, sergeant, retired. And Jim, how are you today, sir?
I'm better than I deserve. I'm just plugging along. We don't have sun here either. It's been overcast and rainy, but we're making do. At least we're in the 60s instead of the 20s and 30s. But
well, that's a good thing. If it was possible, I would loan you guys some of this Georgia sunshine today and send it your way. But we had a conversation earlier in the week, Sarge, and we were talking about today's program. And I came up with this thing. I said, bring your own subject instead of bring your own bottle. Or you can bring your bottle, too, but bring your own subject. And one of the reasons, my subject, and I'm just going to touch on it because I am not anywhere near complete, and my subject would probably take up three or four of these three-hour programs. Now, in my research, which I do on a daily basis, I found out something about the first senator selected from Pennsylvania under the new Constitution, and his name was William McClay. Good old Scottish guy. Well, and then I found out that I had known this previous, that the Senate, the very first Senate, met in total secrecy behind closed doors. And no one was allowed to hear what they were talking about, you know, kind of like the Constitutional Convention. And so they carried it on. And then I found out that Senator McClay, good old Scottish guy, that he was a farmer from Western Pennsylvania. He wasn't involved with these bankers and all this other stuff. And it was really ironic that the legislature of the state of Pennsylvania elected him to the first term. And he only had one dissenting vote in the entire legislature, which tells me a lot. And then, you know, I got to looking, and then I realized or found out that he had actually kept notes of the whole Senate. I should take that back. Unfortunately for history, when the Senate was discussing the Bill of Rights, William McClay was sick. And he didn't make it. I would have loved to have seen what he put, because he took copious notes. And I'm in the process of doing something. I found a copy of William McClay's notes in some of the documents that I had received over a year ago. Now, folks, it takes time to go through this stuff, especially if you do it meticulously. So I was going through this. And then I found out that they did not publish his notes until 1890. You know, almost 90 years after he wrote them. And then I heard that some of his family held them back, possibly because they would have been offensive to a lot of people, including George Washington, John Adams, James Madison, and quite a few other people. Because, being the traditional Scotsman that he was, William McClay didn't hold back. So what I am doing now is I found out that there was a book published of his notes. And it was published in the first time in 1890. And then it was republished in America in 1927. And, of course, most people have never heard of McClay. But I'll tell you what, from my research so far, McClay stood head and shoulders above Thomas Jefferson. And he may have been on an almost equal par with Patrick Henry. But what I'm trying to do right now is I found out that this book was published in 1927. So I got me one. And now what I'm doing is I'm going through the notes that I have that were original source notes in the Pennsylvania archives. Which, as a matter of fact, guys, I got those shortly after we met in South Carolina the last time. And they shipped them to me, and I am now, you know, getting through. I'm about to box 8 out of box 10. But I found all of these notes. And so what I'm doing now is I'm comparing these notes that I have with what the book says, because we know how that they have distorted history as much as possible to conform to certain parameters. So when I complete this study, I'm going to do some Substacks, and I'm going to do some other stuff on it, because I tell you what, so far this man is dynamite. And one of the things that he proves unequivocally is that the Constitution of 1787 was a recreation of the monarchy of England. You know, the actual liberation, the actual truth of America lasted from 1775 until 1787. So we had about 12 years of what we might call actual freedom. And I got into the first part, which I will discuss, and then I want to jump in here and let D.W. Talk. Wait a minute, where do you go? There he is. So I want to let him in, because he's been able to join us now. But one of the things I noticed was that right off of the bat, when the Senate met, the first thing that William McClay protested was the fact that John Adams was there as vice president. And he said, look, I know you are the president of the Senate, but you have no right to actually be here and control the proceedings, because that does away with the separation of powers that the Constitution claims. Because here we have the executive combined with the legislative. And then he really went off the beaten path when John Adams started proposing all of these glorious names for George Washington. You know, His Excellency and all this other stuff. And then they were preparing George Washington's inauguration speech, and they were calling him in that speech the same thing. They were using the same thing that that King George used. And McClay protested it very seriously. But then, before I jump to DW, the one thing that really stuck out to me was the fact of in one of his notes, William McClay said, you know, I do not want to be a traitor, and I hope it will not be perceived as such, but I wish that George Washington was in heaven. And then, therefore, these Federalists couldn't drag him out every time they wanted to do something unconstitutional or irrepublic, that they could drag him out to because the other people in the Senate were afraid to oppose him. And, you know, that just opens all kind of doors when we consider, and I've gotten into several of the early acts, unconstitutional acts, which Washington supported, and almost on every occasion, Alexander Hamilton would drag Washington into the Senate meeting to make sure that no one voted against what he wanted, including the U.S. Bank, you know, the Judicial Act, and the invasion of Pennsylvania to collect the tax. Now, when we get to that part, William McClay just really tore their bucket apart with that invading Pennsylvania to enforce the whiskey tax. And so I'm looking forward to the time that we can really go into that. But DW, hey, buddy, hit that unmute button there and tell us what's going on in sunny Alabama.
It's exactly that. It's beautiful, sunny Alabama. It's 80 degrees, clear skies, dry, and everybody and their dog is out. So it's a beautiful day here. Yeah, sorry. My apologies for being a little bit late. You know, when we talked this morning, Mike, about and William McClay, you know, I had never really heard of him ever, and so I did what 99% of everybody else who was going to do anything did. I Googled him or did a search engine on him. I don't really Google anybody, and. You know, up pops Wikipedia. Well, there he is. And they're talking about him, and they're talking about his contest with John Adams, and that he was a contrarian to many of the things that the Federalists were trying to do. And, wow, you know, I guess if you know the right name to put in your search engine, it's amazing what'll come up, huh?
Yeah, but if you don't know the name, and which, you know, I would like to ask, there's four of us here, and I don't know how many combined years we have of public education. Have any of you gentlemen, and you can go in what order you want to, DW has already said he had never heard of William McClay. Cal, what about you?
I hadn't heard of him until you introduced him to me, a few months back, and... I've read some of his journal that he kept. I haven't finished it, and I agree with you. He starts shredding the whole system apart from the start. In fact, Mike, you know, we keep saying that there were 20 Federalists and 2 Anti-Federalists in the first Senate, and I'd be tended to move McClay over there with William Grayson and Lee.
Well, this morning, Cal, if I may, the one thing I've found out about McClay, I think he deserves it more than they do, because McClay was even critical of them on some of their positions.
From what I've read so far, and I've started reading it, and then, you know, you keep sending me stuff, and I have so many rabbit holes, I got distracted from it and haven't gotten back to it. And I've been meaning to, and I'm looking forward to everything else you have to present on it, because it is fascinating what he has to say. And in doing the studies, he backs up, you know, you put together this timeline in your head and this vision of how things are going on, and, you know, you put this picture in your head, and he just colorizes that picture from what you've made, you know?
Yeah, I think the thing that was... Maybe it was chance, maybe it wasn't, Cal. I'm sorry for interrupting you. Maybe it was chance, maybe it wasn't, but, you know, he and Robert Morris were the two senators chosen from, and Morris almost didn't get the vote. I mean, it was very close, and it was overwhelmingly in favor of McClay. So evidently, the legislature of Pennsylvania kind of knew something was going on at that time.
Just out of curiosity, because you know, Pennsylvania had their own elections for their own legislature, and they were yearly. So it was, you know, it had happened before. That's why they got rid of the bank. You know, the charter for the bank, Robert Morris's bank, was there an election held before the choosing of senators for the first Senate?
Yes, there was, and it went so almost.
The radicals got in control again.
Yes, they were in control, and McClay was, was won by, you know, an overwhelming landslide, only one person against him, where there was actually only three, I think, difference. Robert Morris won by three. Well, then they had to choose, you know, the two senators. Allegedly, there was a drawing to see who would serve a two-year term and who would serve a six-year term. Well, there may have been some gerrymandering with that, because McClay gets the two-year term. And so then, by just your point was well made, Cal, but because by the time in 1791, by the time that McClay's tour was up, the Federalists had retaken the legislature in Pennsylvania, and they wouldn't renew him at all. They had to get rid of him because he was tearing up the Cabbage Patch. So any additional comments there, Cal, and then we'll get Sarge's comments.
No, that makes really good sense because, you know, most people, you know, one, they forget that back then the senators were selected by the state legislatures, and two, fail to realize that the state legislatures were elected, had term limits, well, not term limits, but rotation every year. So the whole base of the legislature could change from one legislative session to the next in a state such as Pennsylvania. And it did. The more you look at it, the more you see where it did that. It had these wide swings from the radicals back over to the Federalists.
Well, the one thing I tell you, we've heard so many times in my history and all of my studies of history, I've always thought of, you know, before he got the Lord Acton virus, I always thought that Thomas Jefferson, and then even after some of his letters after he was president, he kind of went back to what he was originally in the beginning. But I'll tell you something. He couldn't hold a candle to William McClay. And that's just...
From what I've read, I would agree with that completely. Yeah,
yeah, it's incredible. This man should be heralded in America, and I can understand why those who want to preach lies don't want anybody to know about William McClay. But let's jump over. Sarge, what are your thoughts, buddy?
Well, like the other guys, I had never heard of him until last week when you brought it up, and I was a little quicker on the search engine than Murr was, and I managed to find him. And that's the only way I was able to come up with a good guess as to who he was. But I'll tell you what, this guy is awesome. I'm looking forward to reading whatever I can about him. I got to hand it to the legislature of Pennsylvania for electing him in the first place. Unfortunately, you know, for whatever reason, you know, like you said, he was tearing up the Cabbage Patch. The fact that he didn't make it past that two-year term, but I think he made quite the impression on people during that 2 years. And unfortunately, he showed himself to be too much of a freedom lover, and we can't have that, of course, in Washington, D.C. Of course, they weren't Washington
sure
at the time.
And that has to be the reason, you know, that his notes were not published for 89 years.
Yeah.
That's just really something. But, guys, I did say bring your own subject. So let's start out there in Arizona. Cal, what subject did you bring for us today? Mute button, buddy.
There it is, a mute button. Calitis thing I got going. I was going to follow all your lead, and hopefully I got to bring up the rear end and bring my subject up last. So, if you don't mind, I'll defer and let everybody else go.
All right. Well, let's jump to.
Yeah, most people don't seem to want to listen to anyway. And I actually enjoy all the topics you guys bring up.
Well, let's jump to Sarge. Sarge, did you bring your subject?
Kind of. You know, I have thoroughly been enjoying the Substacks you've been doing on the obligation to keep and bear arms. And the admonition you keep putting out there about the putting of the, what do you want to call it, the aliens into uniform.
Yes.
And having them, you know, knocking on doors and collecting firearms, kind of like what happened down in New Orleans after Katrina. And my thoughts were preparedness, not just, you know, guns and ammo, because, you know, of course, that's going to be interesting. But in all walks, you know, of course, my show is normally about health and nutrition. And because of that, it, you know, it goes to me, you know, when the crap hits the fan and grocery stores, pharmacies, doctor's offices, hospitals are no longer open, the individual who is reliant on pharmaceuticals or regular visits to their medical deity, they're going to be in a world of hurt. And they're going to be the first ones probably that will break down and jump on the bus and go to the camps, so to speak, because they literally are left with no other options. And that's why I cover on my shows on a regular basis about how to avoid that situation. If you're in it now, how to get out of it, and that kind of thing. So that's basically, in a nutshell, using nutrition and terahertz frequencies and things like that to eliminate the need for doctors, and or at least reduce the need for doctors, and definitely to get off of pharmaceuticals, because anybody who's on long-term pharmaceuticals, they don't have to be. There are natural options that you can do with a little bit of research and a little bit of effort on your part to stop having to take injectable insulin, unless you're a type 1 diabetic. If you are, that's baked into the cake here. Unfortunately, that's not going to help you. But for type 2 diabetics, people with high blood pressure, people with any of over 900 chronic health issues, there are natural remedies for all of those things that you can do in order to make yourself more self-sufficient, you know, when the crap hits the fan, so to speak. You know, and that's the key. And one of the first things you want to do is fire your MD, because given half a chance, they'll kill you, whether slow or fast. They're the number one cause of death of, you know, in this country and most industrialized countries around the world. And that's a proven fact. I've got a downloadable study on the support info tab on my website, yourdiyhealth.com, where it's called Death by Medicine. And it shows the numbers of, and these are old numbers, it's even worse now, but it shows the fact that medical treatments by MDs are the number one cause of death in this country. So, and on average, they live to be 56 to 58 years of age. So yeah, if you want to live a good, long, healthy life, why would you talk to somebody who's can't do that? You know, if they knew what they claim to know, they'd be the longest lived people on the planet.
Should
but
be.
Not so much. Yeah, they yeah. should be. But that just shows you that the things that they're pushing and the knowledge that they have is subpar at best. And there are people out there who, you know, the vast majority of people live to be 100. The one thing they all have in common is, number one, they're meat eaters. Number two, they avoid doctors like the plague. Those two things. So if you are someone who is strictly, who avoids meat, and good luck, you know, because there's never been a vegan or a vegetarian live to be 100 years old that I'm aware of. Meat eaters are off the charts. So especially in the area, there's 28 cultures around the world where they have 400-year-olds, or, you know, 40, I'm trying to remember the numbers, but they have the number of 100-year-olds is just off the charts in their culture. And it's like 1 in 40 or something like that, where in the U.S. it's like 1 in 10,000 or something. And, you know, those guys, they have, they're all meat eaters. They eat very little carbohydrates, very little veggies. And they do exactly the opposite of what all the tree huggers are talking about in this day and age. And yet they live to be long, healthy ages. So, you know, sometimes it's like 167 years old is the most one that I heard of recently. But, you know, that's the thing in my book is, and I know we're coming up on the break here, getting ready for what's coming, not just guns and ammo and not just food and health type stuff, but also spiritual. You know where you're going when you die. That's a key thing as well. I've got a page on my website for that too.
All right, buddy. Well, and, great points, Jim. Great points. And you guys keep doing this to me. You keep bringing up my grandpa, and my grandpa was in a family of 15 children. He had 14 siblings. And of the 14, the youngest to die was 88. Three of them lived to be over 100, including my grandfather. And on his 97th birthday, someone asked, one of my cousins asked my grandpa, well, what do you attribute your longevity? And he said, well, first thing is I stayed the hell away from doctors. And, you know, and that was in the 70s, Jim, when he said that. So, yeah. That's a definite point. And, yes, we are coming up on the break. But, D.W., do you want to jump in with your subject and get us started before we get to break time?
Well, I do have something I could talk about, but I thought we would maybe defer to that and kind of chew on what Jim had brought up a little bit after the break, huh?
Sure. And, that sounds like a plan. Yeah, for sure. And I've got a question that goes with that, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think that what Jim has brought up is incredibly important, and that there's some conversation that could be had about that, those subject matters where some of these things that people ought to be doing, guess what? It's already too late.
Unfortunately, that is true. And, of course, Cal says he wants to sit back and listen because he's that kind of guy, go ahead, buddy.
Well, you know, Jim's mentioning all these.
Oh, here's the music. We'll be back on the other side, folks. Thank you. So,
you are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at susannasecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S, secret.com.
Attention, freedom-loving patriots. Are you ready to dive deep into the principles that founded our great nation? Join me, Peter Serafin, and the Institute on the Constitution as we light the way to a brighter future with the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. At liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom, you'll find a treasure trove of online courses on the U.S. Constitution, carefully crafted to empower you with knowledge to defend your rights and liberty, whether you're a student, a history enthusiast, or just a concerned citizen. These courses are for you. Gain a comprehensive understanding of our Constitution's principles, the wisdom of our founding fathers, and how to apply them in today's world. As a special offer to our freedom-loving listeners of Republic Broadcasting Network, use coupon code RBN at checkout and get 20% discount on any course. Join the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom and be a part of the movement to uphold the values that have made our nation exceptional. Unleash the power of knowledge and protect what truly matters, our Constitution. Visit liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom today. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Use code RBN for 20% off. Together, we'll be the beacon of freedom our founding generation envisioned. Liberty Lighthouse Classroom, illuminating minds, empowering patriots.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Wouldn't have it any other way. Thank you, Aaron Tippin, for putting my philosophy into words with music, because that's exactly how I feel. One of the hardest things for me to ever do is to interrupt that song, because that song is basically my anthem in so many ways, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Yeah, you know, did I get rich doing this? No. Did I think I would? No. Did I care? No. But the truth is what matters. The truth is what has to be done. And if I cut against the grain, so what? I'm not going to worry about it. Because the one thing I know, when I leave this world, I'll leave it on the right premise. And I won't be a coward, and I won't be someone who sold my soul for money. But that's beside the point. Now let's jump back in here. And Cal was busy with a thought there. So, Cal, you want to jump back in there?
Well, going back to what Jim had brought up, you know, being prepared, is I wanted to point out that the people need to be prepared mentally for what's coming down the pipe. To be prepared that, yes, we don't want violence, but, you know, unfortunately, and history has shown us forever, that sometimes violence is the only remedy to tyranny. And, yeah, we're trying to avoid it. We're trying to get enough people to wake up and stand up against the government, so hopefully you'll all ignore the government into non-existence so we don't have to raise arms. But it's not looking like that's going to happen. And are the people mentally prepared to do the nasty and dirty things that might need to be done? And I don't know how many people have done that. I mean, I don't know how many people who are armed if you're not willing to use those arms to take up and point center dead mass on someone wearing, well, let's just say somebody that's a tyrant, then your arms are useless.
Well, Cal, you touched on a great point there, and, you know, I know you didn't know it, but you hit my next Substack on the obligation to be armed right between the eyes, because that's exactly what I'm going to talk about. And you don't need a gun if you don't have the guts to use it. And that is, and, you know, the mental preparation, that is what my next Substack's about. And you gave it away, darn you. Just kidding.
For that.
Just kidding, buddy. Just kidding. That was fine. DW, Mike, your thoughts?
Primer, that's all I was doing, Mike. Just giving her a primer.
A primer.
Primer.
Yeah, okay. All right, DW, your thoughts, buddy?
Well, I don't know about you guys, but when it comes to those with that word, I shoot primer out of a spray gun. That's what I do. Jim brought his own subject, and he touched on a whole bunch of hot buttons for about 5 minutes there.
Big time.
And the idea that preparation is just a laundry list of and a checklist of a bunch of items of material commodities is we've all seen these lists. You might have even made one. Yeah, you might have even fulfilled that list. Having said that, to Cal's point, do you have the competence to actually employ the use of what's on that list? Do you actually have life skills and resources that allow you to repair things, do mechanic work? Can you weld? If something breaks, do you have the resources and are mentally prepared and proficient and competent enough to do any of these things? I don't care if you've got two gun safes full of guns. Are you competent with all of them? Are you competent with any of them? So there's technical competence, you know. Do you have that? Well, okay. Well, if you have that, does that mean that you have the will and the self-determination and the constitution, your individual constitution and the principles of those, to apply the use of those things in an appropriate manner in any given situation? I think this is at this point that we have people who have done a lot of preparing. They might have even done a lot of training, but they haven't trained their mind. Resources and a strong body are incompetent with a weak mind. And you can identify people with a weak mind. My definition of the weak mind in this case is that they're obedient to government and obedient to tyranny. See, obedience to tyranny, what is tyranny? Well, tyranny is an aggression. It's plain and simple. Tyranny, whether it comes in the form of a legal plunder, of legislation that authorizes crime, that's tyranny. That's an aggression. So I say that in many cases, it's already too late, because I think there's sort of a incomplete situational awareness of the actual conditions that are here and present, clear and present danger and clear and present to all of us right now, is that this ain't coming. It's already here. It's already taken out any number of people already, emotionally, financially, physically, in different areas already. It's a growing situation. And, how long does it take for you to organize your thoughts and your mind and connect it with the actions that need to be taken. It's already too late for a whole bunch of people that can't, their learning curve will not be quick enough.
Well, DW, could I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, how many people do you think who vote would actually take up arms if the government started seizing arms?
1%.
Because they still believe there's an answer in the ballot box.
Well, I think you're kinder about this than I am. I think that they're all cowards. And they've proved their cowardice because they're obedient.
Well, that is a point that I was going to make there. That's where I was progressing to. And that is the point that the majority of people who still believe that you can vote your way out of this are people who are absolute moral cowards who wouldn't do what it would take to make sure it never happened. So they're waiting for somebody else to do it for them. That's the same mindset of the people who think, well, I can give up my arms because I've got the police and I've got the military and they'll protect my rights. I think it's the same mindset. Your thoughts?
Well, it's just exactly the opposite, goobers. Those goobers that think that way, it's the police and the military that's going to take their rights away or aggress against them and oppress them. This is called a lot. In their case, you know, the nice way of saying it, it's a logical fallacy. More direct country way of saying it is that you're a candy ass coward and you're a slave because you're waiting for somebody else to free you. You're looking for somebody else to be responsible for you're looking for a hero, you know, and you'll look everywhere but where you should, and that's in the mirror. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's because their identity is based in their posers. I call it posing. They imitate this sort of synthetic, fake, marketed idea of what a patriot wears and how, what a patriot says and how a patriot talks, and then they bow up and they all rub each other, make each other, you know, hoorah, and then they all cowardly shrink away and are obedient in every way, shape, and form, and then support government and military abusing people who actually want freedom and liberty. So I don't know. I think is this, am I being brutal? Well, I hope so. Because as far as I can tell, in the world that I live in, the reality I live in, I have more respect for open criminals than I do the government criminals. The individual open criminal is working in his own interest, and he's not hiding behind anybody else. Now, this is aggression, but it's the aggression of malice, okay? And you have a natural right and an obligation and a duty to defend yourself and your family against that or any other innocent people around you. You have that duty. But when it comes to governmental tyranny and aggression, you're so obedient and in servitude and so fearful of them that you will actually support them tyrannizing other people. And these are the same people that call themselves patriots. I listened to a AM conservative talk radio show this morning that was Republican based, with an AM Republican host and a forum, and a Republican legislator talking about Christian values and conservatism, and why it was the godly, patriotic thing to do to support eliminating all the Palestinians. This is the same mindset. This is the same mindset that they will turn on you if you think you're, if you oppose any of their aggressions going forward from this point forward. And like I said, I just really don't think, I think it's too late for almost all these people because they don't have the mind and the learning curve to repent from what they have wrong. Okay, they literally don't have the capacity to do it. So it's a far more dangerous time. The danger from my point of view is not from the woke BLM quasi Marxists that are in the cities. It's that people who have been radicalized in the conservative, if you call themselves conservative Christians, to be subservient and obedient to every tyranny and aggression that the government brings forward by believing in false doctrines and covering for their own cowardice. And so I've said a lot here. I'm not going to play around with it. I'm going to say it directly as I think it should be said. So, Cal, Jim, Mike, go for it.
Well, I think we got a great opportunity here because we have our good friend Jim here, and he's a retired policeman from Ohio. And I really look forward to his thoughts on what you just said, DW. So, Jim, jump in there.
Well, first off, while we were talking, it brought back memories about a year or so ago, Daryl, when you said you can't comply your way out of tyranny. And it just, you know, during this conversation, it came up with a new twist that I put in chat. You can't vote your way out of tyranny either.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing that, you know, and you can't pay taxes out of your way out of tyranny either. And it all goes along with the original of compliance. People have got to stand up and say no, like we talked about last week. Have you disobeyed today? That needs to be a daily occurrence. And you know, unfortunately, Mike mentioned being a police officer. You know, I did 16 years, took an early retirement in a city just outside of Columbus, Ohio, and the thing that I saw in my time on the job is not only in my department, but most of the guys I interacted with otherwise, the vast majority, you know, and I know the Constitution's pretty much not worth the paper it's written on, but, you know, even that being said, there were very, very few guys I knew of that had ever read the document that they swore an oath to uphold, protect, and defend. And I was, you know, the same thing was true in my case when I was in the Marine Corps. Very, very few people had a clue what the Constitution said, what they were, you know, supposedly upholding, especially the alleged Bill of Goods that they call the Bill of Rights. And, you know, I did, you know, it took me a few years after I got hired, but I finally did. And it was a aha moment for me because, you know, I had heard of the Second Amendment. Of course, I was, you know, into gun ownership before I got hired as a police officer. But had it not been for that, I probably wouldn't have had much idea what was actually in the so-called Bill of Rights. Maybe a little bit with freedom of speech, but to actually sit down and read those things and allegedly what the founders were supposedly trying to guarantee, you know, at least on the face of it, that, you know, in this day and age, people look at it and just say, nope, no big deal. When I was going through the academy, we had maybe 2 hours of so-called constitutional training, and the vast majority of it was how to get around the Fourth Amendment. And they didn't even talk about the Second Amendment because, you know, Ohio's, just like other states, has a boatload of gun laws that are unconstitutional, but, you know, they weren't going to sit there and cause people to start asking questions like, you know, yeah, this, the right to keep and bear arms will not be infringed. But, hey, why don't we have these laws that say that you can't do this and you can't do that with your guns? It was just a real awakening when it finally started to, when I started to see what was going on and how virtually everything that you're called upon to do as a police officer from the very first call, you're going to be either violating somebody's rights or your oath of office or both. And I really had a hard problem, which is one of the reasons why I ended up taking an early retirement. And I saw it firsthand with a guy that I worked with who was going through some marital problems and emotional things that went along with it. He ended up going to the county health center or mental health center, and they recommended he take some time off and get counseling and all that stuff. And of course, he went back and talked to the bosses, and he turned in his firearm, the department owned gun. And I was his supervisor. Well, actually, I wasn't a supervisor, but I was allowing him to stay in an extra room in my apartment at the time. And when I went into work, the lieutenant told me that by 8 o'clock in the morning, I want his personally owned guns turned in. I said, put that in writing, please. So when I came back in at midnight for my regular shift, it was there in writing. He said, turn it in by 8 in the morning or you'd be written up for insubordination and we'll recommend termination. And I had a one-word response. Nope. And he did try. He wrote me up for insubordination, tried to have me fired. And luckily, because of my years of documentation and practice at these things, I filed a grievance and basically broke it off in his backside and didn't get fired. But he was trying to get me to basically commit theft. And or conversion of trust, because the guy had given me his personally owned. He had a couple of handguns, asked me to secure them for him, and I did just that. I had him locked in a case where I had the only key on me 24/7, no way he could get to them, and they were secure. The department had no right to have his personally owned property, and I stood up and said, nope, not going to do it. And I could have just as easily turned him in and said, you know, he forced me. But I just not cut from that kind of cloth. And that kind of got things started. And they messed with me for 14 out of 16 years. And but when I retired, there were three of us promoted to sergeant at the same time. One of them went kind of off the deep end and, taken a mental retirement and disappeared. And the other one killed himself, unfortunately. The same day he was, his wife and daughter left him, and his life, the job revolved around the job and his family. That was it. And she took their one child and left. And then the same day, the chief told him that he would never see above the rank of sergeant. And it was a real shame because he was the chief of detectives at the time, and his staff, his troops were taking turns coming out to his house and spending time with him. And one day, there was about an hour gap between when one person had to leave and the other one could get there. And he said, no problem. Don't worry about it. I'm fine. Well, the second person showed up and they couldn't find him. They go out looking around and found him on the second floor of his barn. He, taking a 45, put in his mouth and checked out. So I'm glad I'm blessed that I got out of there the way I did with most of my sanity and most of my health. But that's the kind of thing that law enforcement will do to you, because the people that tend to get the jobs as your superiors are usually the ones that really messed with people on the street. And once they get promoted so far, there's no more people on the street to mess with. So what do? They mess with the people on the inside that work for them. And it's pretty much the same everywhere you go. I had a buddy who was on the board of directors with the NRA with me for a while. His name was Harry Thomas. He was a lieutenant with the Cincinnati PD. And our stories were pretty much carbon copies of each other. And he left early and went eccentric, I guess you could say. But, those are the kind of things that you deal with in police work and trying to supposedly be a public servant. I loved the job when I was outside of the building, you know, helping people, you know, folks that lock themselves out of their cars or their house, having issues with this, that, and the other thing. That was, you know, that was a decent part of the job, you know, helping folks. But, you know, I can say in 16 years, I never hit anyone, was not involved in fights. I use my brain instead of my brawn because I don't have that much brawn. But I tried to just treat people as I would like to be treated. And unfortunately, you don't see that too much anymore. You know, every once in a while, I don't have a much interaction with police anymore. But if I do, I kind of try and size them up as to how they would act. And I watch people on the street with other folks. And, you know, there's a whole different breed out there now because they're coming out of the same public school system. And the training is even worse than it was when I went through. So
Jim, let's,
I've been rambling for almost now. We're almost up to the next break.
Now, you're good. But here's the thing. Let's not forget, you know, that the training that you mentioned after 9/11, the majority of police academies in this country are following Mossad directions. Mm-hmm. And so I had one person who dropped out of the school, and he told me, he said, "We're not training cops. We're training assassins." He said, "We were actually told in class that we are to treat the American citizens the same way Israel treats the Palestinians." And he was actually told that in a training class.
Crazy. And most of the people that are on the job now, you know, went through or started around that time, or afterwards. Very few people that went through training before 2001 are still there. So yeah, that's not surprising. Not surprising at all.
Okay, Cal, any comments before we hit the break?
Well, I just to point out how the narrative is spun by the powers that be that, you know, it's constitutional carry. What was it? South Carolina just passed some new constitutional carry.
All right. Here we go.
Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.